Emily Aller, thanks so much for being with us today. I'm really happy to have you on our episode here and to learn more about your story. Why don't you start us off with telling us a little bit about yourself, with your softball career, and what you do currently?
Yeah, sure. So, softball career. We'll start back at the beginning. Wanted to follow in my sister's footsteps. So she actually got into softball before I did. She's about 3 years older than me. Would follow her around and, you know, wanted to do what my big sister did. So that's actually how I got involved. I started when I was 4 or 5, I would say, in like a rec ball, little league, did that in my hometown where I was born in Fremont, California. And then when I was about 8, we moved to Antioch, California, which is where my parents still live to this day. So was in rec ball for, you know, 4 or 5 years. And then when I was about 9 or 10, moved to travel and had a really good experience and just kept going and going and going. And I was always the younger one on the team. So got to watch a lot of my older teammates go on to college and like go through the scholarship and, you know, recruiting process and things like that. So that was always at the forefront for me. So fast forward, went to Northwestern University. I was there for 5 years, redshirted my senior year. So got on the injury train nice and early. The end of my career was not the first time I'd been down that road. So had an amazing career at Northwestern. I had the time of my life, grew into who I am today, and then was fortunate to play for a couple years in the pro league after that. So that was my kind of story from the softball side. And now I work in digital marketing. So I used to work for the NFCA Coaches Association in softball, and then made the shift away from softball a couple of years ago into what I do now. So hopefully that was detailed, but also short enough.
Perfect. I love it. And you recently, 2022, were inducted into the Northwestern Athletics Hall of Fame. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
You were extremely talented and accomplished in your sport. So I was just going to throw it to you. If you would just humble brag for a minute and share with us, like what accomplishments you're most proud of in your, both your collegiate career as well as your professional career.
Yeah, sure. That was a wonderful weekend last year being inducted. That was quite an honor. Had, you know, all the people who were closest to me, even through my softball career, but also just in life, whether I, you know, went 0-for-4 or 4-for-4, these people were there every step of the way. So that was a really fun weekend to be able to celebrate just that career. So humble brag. Oh, let's see where to start. Obviously loved stealing bases. That was my favorite. Had, you know, a few records here and there for that one. I also loved just slapping. So for those who aren't familiar, slapping is where you run through the box to make contact because you're fast to try and get on base. So I think I had a really high batting average 1 year, something we can look at the stats later, but those would probably be my two, the stolen bases and the batting average. But honestly, what I enjoyed most about the game was just competing. And I think that's come through in my professional career and just in life in general is, you know, wanting to be the best that I can be at whatever it is I'm doing. I think that annoys a lot of people too. Like, why can't you just be like, okay, or like, let this go. But I think that competitive nature in athletics has kind of transformed the rest of my life too.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense and makes sense why you were so good at stolen bases, because yes, you won awards both in college as well as in the pros with your stolen bases. And I was studying up for this interview. I was intrigued by that concept of stolen bases, because obviously you had to be a fast runner to do that. But I think it also says something about the grittiness of your competitive nature. It's just like, I would love to be in the thought reel in while you're about to steal a base. Like, what do you attribute made you part of your personality made you really good at stolen bases?
Yeah, that's a good question. And before I answer the stolen base one, my best friend and teammate who I played with for all 4 years at Northwestern until I stayed for the next one, she used to not make fun of me, but like poke fun at, I truly believed I could beat anybody, like any pitcher in the box, regardless of how good she was. I knew that I could at least make contact or get on base. And I think the translating that to stolen bases, it was just me, the catcher, and like the catcher's arm. And I would put my speed over their skills any day. And if I got thrown out, it was on me. Like, they didn't win. I did something wrong, you know? So I think that mindset of just having so much faith in my own abilities, not that I was the greatest that there ever was or will be, but I just knew that there were certain things that I could do really well and tried to hone in on that as best I could.
Yeah. Yeah. You sound pretty gritty, because I can imagine.
I try to keep it down sometimes, but when you get me into like an athletic environment, it comes out real quick.
Right. Okay. So here's a question I didn't prep you for, but so pickleball is all the rage now. Have you gotten onto the bandwagon with pickleball?
I have not done the pickleball bandwagon, and I think it's because I'm afraid I'm going to get addicted to it, to be completely honest. But sure. I did make the mistake of joining a slow pitch team a couple months ago just to like go. And within probably 20 minutes, I was like, this is a bad idea. It's a really bad idea. So I have to rein it in. And I feel like we're going to get into that conversation in a little bit here, but I can't play or do what I used to anymore. And that has affected a lot of the areas that I put myself in.
Absolutely. I know. And, you know, talking to other athletes, there's just like, you want to replace those feelings, and you know that ultimately you can't exactly replace those feelings. So like you said, we'll talk more about that coming up, but I had to ask. I personally started pickleball. I think I've played 4 times now, and I'm an addict. So I definitely, definitely am. You're on the right track with like, don't start what you
stay away.
Don't know if you can, if you want
to. Oh, that's good to know. I'm sure it'll happen, but I'm holding on strong for now.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about your history with injury, because you have a couple of different kinds of injuries that you had experienced and ultimately were medically retired due to concussions. But talk to us a little bit about your experience with injuries, even just throughout your career.
Yeah, it all stems back to, I think I was 12 maybe, and I was playing on a little league or travel ball team. We were at like nationals in Utah or something. It was a really, really hot day, and I had a lot of teammates who had asthma. I promise I'm going to get to the point here. There were a couple teammates who were dropping like flies, like just on the verge of passing out, needed medical attention, like took them to the hospital, 2, 3, like in the order of triage, they were the ones that needed to be most taken care of at the time. And while that was happening, I broke my thumb. I don't know how it happened. I don't remember if it was like I got hit by a pitch or like fielder ground ball or whatever, but I broke my thumb. So anyways, I'm going to my parents and my coaches like, hey, like my thumb really hurts right now. And, you know, there's people literally almost dying on the other side. So they're like, you're fine. Get going. Like, we'll deal with it after. You know, there's just a lot of things happening right now. So the tournament ended. Everyone was fine. Buried the lead there. Everyone was fine. And then, you know, a couple days later, I'm like, hey, my thumb still really hurts. And my mom was like, oh, shit. Sorry, hopefully I can cuss on this. And so they take me to the you know, emergency room, and I get an MRI. And sure enough, my thumb's broken. My parents to this day, like, still have the guilt. But I think that was the first, like, defining moment in my career of what is pain? How long can you go with it? And, like, what needs to be addressed and all that kind of stuff. So that was my very first injury. And then nothing else happened to me till I took a line drive off my forehead in high school, bounced back, was doing okay after that one. And then in college is where I really started to go down the injury track. So hip labrums, tore my adductors off my pubic bone multiple times. I had shoulder surgery for the pros, and then the concussion is what knocked me out. So no stranger to injury, no stranger to rehab, no stranger to meds and surgeries. I've had 6 total surgeries at this point. So long, long road. But yeah, it was that final concussion that got me.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry that happened to you. So it's, you know, it's kind of tricky with concussions, because it's not certainly not clear cut. And as an athlete who is used to working through and coming back from injury, I know just in what I know of you, that that must have been a very tricky recovery from that concussion that was different and it felt different to you. So talk to us a little bit about that decision to medically retire. How did you make that decision and how did you know that that was the right decision for you and your body?
Yeah, good question. So in some of my surgeries or injuries and surgeries in college, that was also pretty hidden. Like no one could really see the tears that I had in my adductors, or like I wasn't in a cast or a boot or a sling or whatever it is. So I had already started to understand what that like hidden and invisible injury was like. Like I felt the pain, but no one else could physically see that. And, you know, in college and athletics as a whole, it's like this facade. I'm not hurt. I'm not in pain. I'm not, you know, I'm great. And so I was already down that road before. But to your point, I think with a concussion, there's like nothing to see, you know, no one has any idea. And there's no way, true way to rest your brain besides being asleep. So I think for me, sleep just became this like safe haven where I could just shut down and didn't need to talk to anyone, do anything, knew it was best for my brain. But in terms of like medically retiring, I think I lost a lot of friends and teammates along the way, because when you're in that community and mindset of just push harder, just one more rep. Like I had a teammate tell me I wasn't going hard enough at rehab, which is why I couldn't come back. And so it's just like, there was just no understanding, you know, if you haven't gone through it, you don't understand what that is. And it's hard to seek out that validation from others knowing that they don't have that. So to get to that decision took me years, months and years, because of this environment that I was a part of where I was quitting, I was giving up, I wasn't trying hard enough. I, you know, there were still other things that I could do. And it just got to, I know there's stages of grief and whatever, it, that acceptance phase was the hardest one for me to get to. And I think there are still days where I'm maybe not all the way there yet, but once I accepted that my life was forever changed, I could start to move forward.
Mm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So how, out of curiosity, how many months or what length of time went by from that concussion to that last one to when you made the decision with your doctors, I'm guessing, to take the medical retirement and step away?
It's a good question. I don't remember the exact date, but it was at least 2 or 3 years it's a while. When I got the concussion, I tried to come back and play the next season. And the moment I stepped on the field, I was like, this is not good, you know? So that was a huge awakening. But then from there, it was like, okay, well, what else do I have to do? You know, like I was trying to play in the Olympics. And so I'm talking so many different doctors and trainers and like, what more can we do here? So it took me probably 2 or 3 years to just get to a point where that was it, you know?
Gritty girl, Emily.
Tried. No one can tell me I didn't try, you know?
Definitely. There's no, you know, no one can say that you didn't give that your full effort, along with like getting different opinions and trying different therapies and waiting it out, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is more than I was expecting. So
Me too. I look back on that though, and I often think, where would I be now if I made that decision sooner? You know, I put my life on hold for so long to see if things were going to be different or just like figure out if I could push through it. And it's not a regret, but I think of that as I move forward now of like, hey, can you let this go sooner? You know, like, is this something that you need to hold on to for this long? Because I don't want to be in that space where I wait 3 years to like make a move, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. And yeah, those are the kinds of things. It's like no one's prepared to know exactly how to make that decision. So you fumble through the best that you can, and certainly hindsight. Well, in this case, I wouldn't even say hindsight of 2020, because it's like you said, who even knows? But at least you gave it your everything that you could, and then you walked away feeling at least the confidence to know that it was the right decision for you. I think that's probably what it comes down to, really. It's like the right amount of time is whatever time it takes for you to know that even if it's not the answer that you want, it is the right decision for you and your long-term health to discontinue. So,
yeah.
Speaking of that kind of recovery process and that transition mm-hmm. in medical retirement, when you're dealing with concussion recovery, I mean, it's a very long-lasting impact, certainly can, you know, be problematic mm-hmm. months and years later. So as you're dealing with the concussion recovery and whatever changes that have happened within your, you know, your being physically due to the concussions, and then you're also now dealing with that emotional piece of psychological piece of letting go of your sport. I mean, it's a very like layered transition. Did you continue to have symptoms and I'm just curious. I mean, I don't know necessarily. I just like to reflect a little bit on what that's like to recover from both the concussion as well as the emotional psychological impact.
Yeah. Well, I still have symptoms to this day. So I feel like we should get that out there, that these glasses I wear is because of that. There's a lot that my whole life has changed, you know, but the piece of the like physical aspect of it that has certainly evolved over the last, how many years has it been? 6 or 7 years, which is wild. I get asked a lot, like, am I fully recovered? Or like, you know, you look so much better. Like you look so much happier, you know, all this kind of stuff. How are you doing? And I haven't fully recovered. I got to that acceptance phase. I stopped fighting what I was feeling and doing every day and learned to change my behavior because of it versus just running myself into this brick wall every single time because I didn't want to face the facts. So nothing really has changed. I've just gotten better at managing it and understanding how to live my life within those parameters, which is really, really sad to like say out loud, you know, but I had to get to that point because I was running myself into the ground at that point. It wasn't even my symptoms. It was me constantly fighting them that was just putting me back in this hole, which goes to that emotional, you know, psychological side too. So it's been a lot of, you know, I've been in rehab probably more than most athletes for all my various injuries. I can judge a physical therapist in 20 seconds. I know whether they're going to be good or not just based on everything that I've been through. Same with surgeons. Like, but it's, you know, things have evolved over the years. Some things have certainly gotten better, but there's nothing that's gone away. And then on the emotional side, it's like a whole different process to navigate that journey. And like you're saying, come to that decision, be okay with that decision. You know, I don't even feel like I came to it. The decision came to me, which is the hard part. Like I had to accept that this was the decision, you know? So I don't even know if that answers the question, but it's been a wild 7 years. I think it's been 7 years.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure there's, you know, grief is cyclical, right? It's not like a mm-hmm. linear process. And so it does kind of, I'm sure, keep cropping up. And when you know, different triggering points or things happening in life and that. But overall, I would just ask, like, what impact has medical retirement had on you? Certainly, it's hard to not go out on your own terms, you know, or just to be like, well, I just got outskilled and I just, you know, I did my best, you know, mm-hmm. the traditional transition out of sport for most athletes, but the specifically being taken away from it from a physical standpoint, like what impact did that have on you? And like you said, I know that acceptance has been, you know, kind of like a zigzag journey, but you did at some point kind of come to that point. And I'm just curious, like, well, we can get to that in a minute. Let's hold off on the acceptance part again, but let's just talk more about that impact that it has had on you personally.
Yeah. It's funny because there's so many people that have said, I was going to do this anyways. Like what I'm doing right now is what I was born and destined to do. It's what I've always wanted to do. Marketing, impacting the game and others off the field. Like my time on the field was not limited, but I was never going to be the person that was in softball for, you know, my whole life. But that part of me not getting to decide when it was over was what I held on to for a very long time. Once I got past that, I realized that there was this whole other life waiting for me. The life that I live now, in the city that I live in now, where I live, what I'm doing, never would have been possible if I was still playing, or I shouldn't say never, but it would be very far, far out of reach if I was still playing. So in the everything happens for a reason thing, I have a love-hate relationship with that. But the end of my career almost expedited what I feel like I was really meant to be doing. And that softball had run its course, whether I was going to go play in the Olympics or not.
Yeah. Yeah. And along that road, did you ever have any mental health struggles with that, you know, getting towards that place of acceptance? And if so, like, what was your hardest time? Was your like rock bottom?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Many. To answer the first part, I think it's more of just, again, that acceptance piece of like, this is actually happening, you know? And like you said, your whole identity, everything I'd ever owned or known, love, a lot of my teammates and friends and that community just, you know, immediately removed from. And that's not to say all of them. Like, I have a very good core of people in my corner. And I think throughout this whole process, that has become increasingly clear and increasingly smaller based on, you know, a variety of different factors. So that's a whole mental health piece too. My, you know, day-to-day friends changed. And so, yeah, definitely was in therapy, definitely didn't want to talk about what was happening. You could ask me if I was okay, and I was like, yep, good. And unless you like really dug deeper, you were never going to get what was actually happening. So went through a lot of that. But I think the rock bottom piece was actually during the pandemic, and it had truly nothing to do with the pandemic itself. It was just me alone on my couch in Kentucky. And like real, like, what am I doing with my life right now? You know, and it came increasingly clear. I was, had only ever known softball. I played softball. I live softball. I taught softball. I breathe softball. I worked in softball. And it was just this moment of, but I can't even play anymore, you know? And like, I'm in the sport in all these different areas. And it's just this constant everyday reminder, every minute of everyday reminder that I don't have this thing anymore. So my rock bottom was on the couch crying to my family over FaceTime of something has to change, or like, I'm not gonna make it out of this place, you know? And so I actually flew home in the middle of the pandemic when no one was flying. So I have some crazy pictures of like being alone in an airport with 10 other people. Can you imagine going to an airport and there's only 10 people there? It was crazy. My flight was canceled 3 times. I was on 3 different connections just to get to a place because everything was shut down. And it was the smartest decision I made. And my parents were like, even though this is not supposed to be happening, if you stay there, like, this is worse. So that was my rock bottom. But look at me now. Yeah. Here we are.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you finally kind of opened up about what you were, you know, experiencing, because I know that's not easy. And when you get to that point where you just know that it's necessary, I'm glad that you had the right people in place to help you, because I know that, you know, it makes a big difference. You and I have talked before about the athletic mentality. Certainly we talked earlier in this interview about that grittiness and that, you know, that will to make the result happen that you like are envisioning happening. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's not best to power through. So what have you learned about the athletic mentality and like how it serves you well and how sometimes you need to kind of rein it in?
great word. So what I've learned about the athletic mentality, and I think this is something that has become increasingly clear over the years that I've been out of the sport, is there is no rest in athletics. There is no recharge. There is no recover. And we talk about it, but it's like, it's almost taboo to do it. You know, even on an off day, you're like rewarded for coming in to take more swings. And so I used to, my first boss at my new job used to ask me profusely, when am I taking PTO? And I was like, I don't have anywhere to go. I don't have a reason to take PTO. Why would I take PTO? And she was like, I want you, like, I'm literally ordering you to schedule a day of PTO and do absolutely nothing. And I was like, that's not allowed, you know? And so I had those types of people too in my life, looking at my day to day and saying, you don't have to do this anymore. And I think that those are the people that we need, but are also the hardest to listen to, because you know, it's like deep down against everything that you've ever known. So I've had to unlearn, it's okay to take a break. It's okay to shut my laptop for 10 minutes. It's okay to go on a walk. It's okay to be away from, you know, Slack, the communication system, for 3 seconds to like go pee, you know. And in athletics, it's always push through, you know. Anyways, so just unlearning those aspects has changed my life, I think you could say, probably. But on the flip side, I am an athlete at heart, and there's certain things that are never going to change. And I am who I am, and I excel in the things that I do because of the competition and the ability to work in teams and not stopping until the project's done and meeting deadlines. And there's so much good. There's so much good that comes from athletics, but that I've had to pay very close attention to the pieces that I want to change as well.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's like, take the good from it. And there is kind of ingrained in athletics and unhealthiness, like long past rest days and recovery days, like you said, being rewarded for actually not doing what's physically and mentally healthy for your body, because it may, you know, prove, so to speak, in quotes, your dedication or, you know, what have you. I mean, it's pretty jacked up in sports culture. But so to be able to then realize how that has impacted you as an individual and your mindset, and like let go of the unhealthy things, like shaking those pieces off, and then keeping the things that are super healthy, like you said, like just all the grittiness that you have, and like you're a project, you are going to finish that project, and you are, you know, determined, and you are a team player, and you know, all these types of things that athletics teaches you, but just like shaking off the things that don't serve you well anymore, and realizing that, okay, you actually are, you do have the capability of kind of being your own coach. Like, you get to decide what is best for you. No one is making you feel, hopefully, that you, it has to look like how they define it. But you get to define it. So I don't know. I think that's kind of an exciting piece of it that I hope our listeners are picking up on, is that there is a certain freedom to say, no, it's like time for me to stand on my own 2 feet and advocate for myself. What is good for me and what I just need to let go of, because it was never really good for me, although it was status quo.
That's actually a really good point. And I find that now at the gym, like the gyms that I go to with the trainers or the individuals with that I'm, you know, working out with, they're like pedal to the metal, you know, and I'll walk in and I'll be like, I'm just glad I showed up today. You know, like, that's a win for me. Yep. I don't need your, like, I'm not putting more weight on my back. I've done that already. And I think that's something that I have to remind myself, is like, there are people who walk this earth who have never experienced that level or that type of whatever, and they're seeking it. And I can be okay to say, actually, I've done that already. That's not the path that I'm on anymore. I'm just happy to be here. And you're lucky that I showed up, to be honest, because I could have canceled for today, you know? And like, that's like so against the athletic mentality, but that's not a space that I have to live in anymore. Like, I'm just doing this for me to show up and like be comfortable in my body. I don't have to compete or match standards of like anyone else.
Yeah. That is really powerful. I just got the chills, actually, because I do think that that is a really freeing concept that is not talked about in athletics. Like that doesn't make the stories, you know, that doesn't, sure. I just think that's the aftermath of sports culture that a lot of people don't actually get to because they don't give themselves permission, or maybe there's no one modeling that to them. So just thank you, little side note, but thank you for letting us kind of get in on that with you and how you think about it now. I loved your example with the gym because it's like, I've seen this before. Like, no, like on a different day, I'd be feeling that. But you know what? Today, like you said, I'm just happy I actually showed up.
Happy to be here. It's so true.
Go to the motions and go home.
Yeah. In that moment, though, like it's crossing with everything that you have been told in the past. Like even for me to say out loud, I'm just happy to be here. In my mind, I'm like, well, you're supposed to be here and do your best show, you know, like it's like the angel and devil still talking on my shoulder all the time. But like you're saying, the more that I can speak it into existence, because I am just glad that I showed up after my 10-hour workday, like that is the win today, not me putting 200 pounds on my back. So it's a constant struggle.
And I appreciate your honesty in that, because I think that is realistic. And your formative years, these were the reels in your head, you know, and the expectations you held of yourself. And so I don't imagine that will ever go away. You are always going to have that devil on your shoulder and the angel trying to talk yourself like into better choices or, you know, balance or whatever it is. Because those were very formative years, and that's just one of those things that's part of who you are. So, so talking, revisiting that, earlier we were talking about that point of acceptance and, how that took a long time to get to. You mentioned a few things that helped you in that journey, you know, certainly therapy, certainly your family and opening up to them and, and that kind of thing, but talk to us just as much as you can here about what kinds of things that helped play into that process of acceptance for you, because I know there are listeners here who are maybe at the very beginning of that process. So it's always helpful to ask athletes like yourself, like, what did it for you? And this is not like a cure all, fix all, one time thing, but what are the kinds of things that you put in front of you that helped you along that path towards acceptance?
Yeah, I tried everything in the best way. And I think I was along that path looking for this magic bullet that was going to get me to acceptance. And so meditating, journaling. My mom told me I needed a hobby. So one thing that we were talking about is replacing the loss. So, okay, so you don't have softball anymore. Let's just fill it with something else. Don't recommend. So I spent like an hour walking around Joann Fabrics waiting for this hobby to pop out of me that would like change my trajectory of how I felt about softball and grief in my career. Didn't work. So it was just this combination of trying everything that people suggested would increase your mental health or help you get over. I love reading self-help books. That's like my thing. I think it's going to make me a better person. I don't know, but I read books on like, there's actually a grief handbook. Didn't know if you know that existed. That helped me through some things. Like what to do when you have no control over the situation that you're in, like everything under the sun I tried and nothing alone worked. But I think that culmination of everything that I was doing helped set me on that path. But ultimately it was my friends and family who just with so much love and care and walked me through that whole process, was like, do you want to keep living this way? Ultimately, you know, like it's been a long time. And I was never in a place to hear that until I had walked through all of those things. And it was a conclusion that I had to come to on my own of like, you've tried every doctor, you've flown all across the country, you've been in rehab for however many years. And if you know anything from me in this conversation, I crushed rehab. I was very good at it.
Of course you did.
I crushed it, didn't help. So it just like it was this huge culmination of me finally saying, I can walk away knowing that I did everything that was asked of me and that I was supposed to do to come out on the other side. And I didn't like, I'm hurt. I am injured. It's not going away, you
Right.
know? So, there was no one thing. I did everything. And I think I just hit this moment where I was like, okay, you did everything, you know? And if you can walk away knowing that you did absolutely everything you could to not have this be the outcome, then I'm proud of you for doing that, you know?
That's fantastic. I think that's like, I'm sure that felt like a huge aha moment, even though in many ways, yes, I suppose that's simple, but it's
Yeah.
not at all.
Yeah.
It sounds simple to somebody maybe who isn't in your head, because Emily, clearly we've established that you are a very stubborn person and are not going to give up easily. And you always think, like, even when it comes down to the mound, like, you always felt like you could take them, the pitch. And kind of like the same idea. It's like, well, I can figure this out. There's just something I'm not doing yet. And so at some point to like release, I'm thinking of like a death grip, and releasing the death grip on your softball career, freed you to like just honestly
Live.
like listen to your body and your brain and be able to, keep you hold your head high. It's like that idea of there's nothing to be ashamed of here, and you left it all out on the field. And bodies do have limits. I mean, it just things happen, accidents happen, injuries happen. The world is not ideal, and certainly it had nothing to do with what was in your heart and how hard you wanted, how bad you wanted it, and how hard you were willing to work for it, because you clearly worked really hard, and then you did it again and again and again and again until you finally got wise to it. So tell me this. I know that you stayed connected to softball, and I was just curious, a lot of athletes who are walking away from their sport, medically retiring. It's not really walking away. I shouldn't even say that, but moving on from their sport due to medical reasons, one of the big questions that they have is, should I stay involved? Like, is that going to be good for me? Is that going to be just a constant reminder of what I can no longer do? So it's a very personal decision that certainly isn't like a one answer for everybody. But talk to us a little bit about what was your headspace with getting into coaching, right? You were doing some coaching
Like giving lessons and clinics
lessons.
and things
Okay.
like
And then you stayed involved with some marketing with
that.
softball. That probably feels very different. But I'm just curious, like if that aspect was helpful for you, or if you ended up having to kind of walk away from that because it was just kind of one of those things that was hard.
Good question. So I would say for that first 2 or 3 year period where I felt truly believed that I was still going to play, that it was a really good way to keep me involved and like a lot of the lessons and clientele that I had was from my playing career. They'd watch me play, they see me, they were just as invested in me coming back as I was. So it was good to like still have those connections and like that extra motivation and inspiration to like keep going. And then when I got to that acceptance phase, I cut all ties with softball. I walked away from everything, the job that I had, lessons, clinics. I have not done anything for anyone in the sport of softball. I didn't watch it. I didn't go to it. I nothing. And I needed that time to reset myself from that mental health aspect. And I think in that phase, that's probably the big part of where I lost a lot of teammates and friends and people who, not to say they weren't with me the whole time, but I think there was this pivotal moment in my career of like, she's not coming back. And what do we do now? Like, are we still tied to her as a friend, or is it just teammates, or like, what is that? I think that was a really hard time to go through. But on the other side, I have, like I said, that circle and those individuals who were there every step of the way, and regardless of whether I was playing or not, wanted to be involved, you know? So it was both. It was both. And now that I had those ties cut, I'm slowly starting to reacclimate myself in the ways that I want to, and in the ways that are safe for me, like turning on a softball game. Maybe I'll watch an inning or two and then I'll shut it off and walk away. Never given a lesson since, never been to a clinic since. Like, I'm choosing the areas in which I feel safe and comfortable coming back to this world.
That is brilliant. I mean, maybe you should be a therapist. I feel like that. I feel like that was really good.
I've learned a lot in therapy.
I guess so. You were paying attention. Well,
I was.
That makes sense too. Of course, you're gonna kill that as well. we're wrapping up here. Just like a few more questions, kind of on just things that you've learned and your transition forward, that you can kind of give insights into listeners who are more at the beginning or middle of that process. So, knowing what you know now, if you could go back in time and tell yourself something in those beginning months following medical retirement, what would you say to yourself?
I didn't prepare for this one.
That's okay. Take a minute. It's all good.
I think when it first happened, I would have, well, that's the thing. I could say whatever I want to myself, but I'm still who I am. Like, I don't know if words would have mattered. Going a little off tangent, but I don't know if there was anything that anyone could have said or done differently. But I think for myself, again, I don't think I would take this advice, but what I would say is, like, ride it out. You know, I think I was trying so hard to get back, and like, what needed to be done. And again, I was surrounded by people saying, what do you need to do? Like, do five more, you know, reps of this exercise. And I'm like, well, the PT told me not to push it, you know. It's like that. So ride it out, and just you know, you try so hard to get back on the field, but in hindsight, that was never going to happen, you know. So it's like, could I have changed the trajectory if I would have just chilled? But hindsight is 2020. Right. When it comes to the like the decision process, I think I would have said something to get it to happen sooner. Something to get me there sooner. And again, I think I had to get there on my own time, but looking back at it, you know, I don't want to say I lost 3 years of my life. I certainly didn't do that, but I could have been 3 years farther along if I would have accepted it sooner or tried harder to stop denying it, you know? So,
those are good. Those are good thoughts. So answer this, looking back at this process for you, because it's all a process. We're all just doing the best we can at the time, you know, we're at. But how has this experience shaped you as a person? You know, certainly you have an athletic mindset, but just as a person, how has this experience with medical retirement shaped you?
It's helped me see so much more than the sport. I think as we're growing up and we're kids and we're trying, you know, to head towards these goals, it's just one track mind. It's all we do, especially if you're good and like trying to not, I shouldn't say if you're good, especially if you're determined to get to whatever the next level is. It's like everything else gets blocked out, which is needed at times for sure. But I think I had a very narrow view of life just playing softball. It's taught me so much, you know, but when it was over, I had nothing else lined up for myself outside of, you know, my family. So I think that aspect. And then the other piece is nothing goes according to plan. And I think in athletics, it's like, besides the COVID year, there's always this national championship link, like the tournament never goes away. It never changes. Maybe your team's in it or you're not in it. Like that's something that you can control though, theoretically, but life, there is not always this target and there's not always this clear path to get there. And this whole situation has forced me to stop making long-term plans, not to not have dreams and not to not have hopes, but my life has not turned out the way that I envisioned it would for 20 years. And that took me a long time to accept. And so instead of saying, okay, well, what's my next goal? I started thinking that way. It was like, how about we just enjoy life where we are, you know, and figure out where we want to go along the way. I've really had to let go of the control of what I thought my life was going to look like. And that's been hard.
Yeah, no, that is actually, I think, really, you know, impactful, because everything says, you know, to be a successful person, it looks like this. And we want to be goal oriented, and that can sometimes help us get out of funks, you know, depression and stuff like that. But maybe that's actually the reason why you're at a low in, you know, in life. This is certainly plausible for some people and different for other people, but maybe you're in a low in life because you've put so much pressure on yourself to figure out that next thing that you can't even be happy and enjoy the moment with where you're at. And it's not even possible. So maybe there is some kind of balance we can, you know, hit between continuing to push ourselves forward. And then other times just like going along for the ride and being flexible and being kind of that, you know, pack a backpack and go and just get in the car, you know, like it doesn't always have to follow an exact map. That's the shortest distance from point A to point, you know, B. It may take some winds and turns. And I do think that if we all under, it's a very adult level learning. And all of us who are adults, including myself, are still learning that, because it's always a balance and having to ask ourselves the hard questions. Like, how is this? Think of Dr. Phil, like, how is that working for you? You know? Like, if we just can ask ourselves that more often, oftentimes we will come to different conclusions than maybe is our first inclination of solving a problem. Maybe we need to have more balance on the other side. So thank you for sharing that. That is one that I think we haven't explored before in our podcast series. So time to close the podcast. So if Emily is one, if you would like, I would like to ask you to just give a closing thought to athletes who are listening, who are either considering medical retirement or are medically retired and struggling kind of in that transition. Like, what final encouragements might you give to them? It doesn't have to be everything you've got. You've shared a lot already, but just give us a final word to go out on today.
Yeah. You have to be ready to receive it. I feel like I put something like this in my little letter too, of there's so many things that I've said here today that I never would have listened to 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, especially on like the first week after I got hurt. So giving yourself that grace and that space to work through the journey with yourself. You know, there's so many impactful things my best friend and my family have said to me 5 years ago that I never listened to, didn't, you know, wasn't in a place to receive it, whatever it was. And that maybe they said the same thing to me last week and it's like changed my life. So you have to be in that space and then giving yourself that grace and compassion as you're working through those phases. Took me 3 years to get to acceptance, you know, like here we are. And I'm looking back thinking to myself, huh, I wonder what would have happened if we got to 3 months, you know, instead of 3 weeks. But I wasn't in that space to hear it and receive it. And so everyone has their own timeline, like you said. And I think just being willing and open. And then the last piece I'll say, I've learned some of this through the mentorship that you have so graciously offered me for some other sidelined athletes. people don't understand. Like if they've never gone through this, they don't understand. And so they're going to, people, your family, friends, strangers, they're going to say things that are off-putting and triggering for you, but they don't have the context. They don't have the knowledge. They don't have whatever. So you have to try your best to stick to what you know and who you are and help other people along if you want them to be there. But it's not your place to educate those who can't understand it.
Yeah.
So all in there.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I appreciate that so much. Emily, this has been a really thought-provoking conversation. I know that as much as I've talked a lot about these issues, I think you've brought up different aspects of things and nuances that are fresh. So thank you so much for giving us your thoughts today and all your insights.
Well, thanks for having me. And thank you for all you do for individuals like me. I wish I would have had these resources sooner, but I'm really fortunate to try to be able to help where I can now. So thank you for everything that you do.
Absolutely.